Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, bringing you the natural nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. We are so happy to be a part of Progressive Radio Network, and you can listen live to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z every Tuesday, 10 to 11 a.m., or you can tune in on the archives, both to our show and every show that they bring you right here on Progressive Radio Network. I was driving upstate New York last week to a beautiful, beautiful place called Saratoga Springs. And in Saratoga Springs, there are healing waters that I highly suggest you make a point of getting there and visiting. It's really an amazing place that has been used as a healing spring for thousands of years by the Native Americans. And it was also used by President Roosevelt. Franklin Delano Roosevelt set up a medical center there, the largest in the country, that saw hundreds of thousands of people a year who bathed in the specific healing waters. And if you want to listen to a full show about that, we do have some, we do have one on the archives here at PRN. And you would be really, really interested in that show as well. So, that was Trent Milliner. He's the person who actually took me around to the places there to soak in the hot springs, drink the mineral waters, and in general just have a really interesting, historic, and fantastic healing experience. In addition, while I was on my way there, I answered a call-in show's question about this new drug that came out for women that's supposed to be a sexual enhancer. So what was really wonderful is that someone emailed me, and hello if you are listening today as well, saying that they always listen to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, even though it was a very, very far away place. So that's what's so fantastic about having podcasts that are available to anyone, anywhere, anytime. And that's one of the things we love about Progressive Radio Network. Today, we have a very interesting guest. Her name is Beth Warren. And Beth is a registered dietitian. She's the author of a wonderful book called Living a Real Life with Real Food, How to Get Healthy, Lose Weight, and Stay Energized the Kosher Way. And Beth is a registered dietitian and a nutritionist and a New York State certified dietitian nutritionist with a private practice in Brooklyn. She holds a master's of science degree in nutrition as well as having studied at Yeshiva University. She's a member of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, Dietitians in Integrative and Functional Medicine, and Nutrition Entrepreneurs, New York State Dietetic Association, and the Society of Nutrition Education. She is also a nutrition expert for healthprofs.com, a part of the kosher food bloggers and around the plate blogging communities, and she's a certified preventiveobesity.net leader. So Beth has a very long list of accomplishments in the nutrition field, and we're very happy to have her as our guest today, Beth Warren. So thank you so much for joining us here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
So you need to talk a little louder. Let's see if we can, because it sounds a little, or maybe our engineer can help with that. So anyway, I wanted to bring you on board to explain how you originally got interested in nutrition.
Well, the thing is with the nutrition field is that nutrition is always a part of your health, you know, and well-being. So it's not just something you get into all of a sudden. It's not a 9-to-5 job. It's something that has always been a part of my life and everyone's life because we eat every day. And as I've always loved food, and whether it was healthy or not when I was younger. I just would love to eat it, love to be around it. And as I got older and more interested in the sciences, I learned the science behind food and how what you eat really affects your body and can help prevent things and also help help with certain diseases to not always cure them, but with certain symptoms and things like that. So when I saw the power of food, I got really even more interested in it, and it became a lifestyle for myself, for my family, and then something I'm luckily able to help teach others in my private practice.
Now, when you got all these conventional degrees, and you certainly have a long list of them, what motivated you to go into that? I mean, getting an RD is actually the apex of nutrition in terms of someone who wants to work in the field. A lot of people become just clinical nutritionists or holistic nutritionists, but that is not the same from the state's point of view or from a billing point of view or from working professionally as getting an RD degree, which you have.
Exactly. And you hit the nail on the head with saying that that's just, you know, kind of what the government, you know, more nationally recognized credentialing is. I really felt like I was able to reach more people that way if I went that route. In my book, you know, like you said, it's entitled Living a Real Life with Real Food. I still promote, you know, less processed foods as much as possible and natural holistic aspects like that. But my grounding in education is based on you know, scientifically based principles and the routine of getting that registered dietitian certification. So I went through that whole program. And it really does add a lot of credibility to the field. And it does give, you are ensured that when you are speaking to a dietitian, you know exactly what kind of training they've gone through in terms of clinical experience and community experience and all these other aspects that I think are really critical for people to find out about if someone isn't a dietitian, of what kind of experience they have. But because of the credential, people already know that coming in, that I know that she's had this level of experience already and this level of education already because of that. And it was I'm able to reach a lot more people, get more of that credibility in the field. So a lot of doctor referrals and things like that where they may not have been susceptible to referring to a dietitian, but because of the credential, and they say, okay, give it a try. So that's all I need them to say, because once I get them in my office, these patients, then I'm able to really show them how much we could help for whatever they're going through. So I did go that route originally, and I'm always happy I did it, because from there, once you have the basic education and that credential, you could them, it knows no bounds. So you could take your experience and put yourself in all different medical situations and community situations and learn from experience in that aspect of different lifestyles and different symptoms and different medical issues people are going through, and then find your way with that, which is what I did with the whole Living a Real Life with Real Food, is that given the scientific basis of everything and the chemistry of food and all those basics, what do we do with that in our lifestyle? How do we use that background of education and in a practical way and say, you know, what's the common thread here? Because there's a lot of controversy out there, and there's a lot of debates about the right way to eat, and there's a lot of fad diets that people have to be cautious of. And I just like to just promote that if you eat whole, less processed foods as much as possible, which is where the science has always been, and a lot of plants, legumes, you know, mostly plant-based diets and still picking quality proteins, animal proteins, but just having a balanced diet, then you're able to implement all that nutrition background education into a lifestyle. So that's really what it becomes.
Well, that was an excellent discussion, Beth, and I want to tell people they can find you at BethWarrenNutrition.com. That's Beth, B-E-T-H, same name as my sister, Warren, W-A-R-R-E-N, and then the word nutrition. So it's BethWarrenNutrition.com. And your book is just beautiful, Living a Real Life with Real Food, How to Get Healthy, Lose Weight, and Stay Energized. So after explaining to us, which you did so well, Beth, about the fact that by having this conventional education, you then can have much more reach and a wider variety of people can be influenced by your knowledge and your guidance. Now, how different is what you've learned and your approach with real food? And then we're going to talk a lot about kosher food because that's something you're an expert at, and I haven't had other guests, you know, specifically focus on that. But just in terms of the high level of interest and writing you do about what you call real food, how different is that from what was presented in mainstream education through your RD and other master's studies?
Well, I feel like a great example of that, I guess the difference there would be, hopefully a lot of us don't know what it's like to be in a hospital, but these days, if you're still a patient in a hospital, the types of foods you get on your plate for different diets are foods, in my opinion, and I mean, and studies show, are not the best for whatever specific situation a person is in the hospital for. So you have diabetic diets, and sometimes on their plate there's things, carbohydrate count, in my opinion, would be too high for someone who...
Not only that, what about all the chemicals? Like, they'll add in a lot of NutraSweet, you know, that'll be their big...
And, right.
Okay, somebody has diabetes, will use artificial sweeteners instead of sugar. But it's still full of toxic chemicals, it's high on the glycemic index,
yeah, et cetera. Exactly. Also, it's, like, kind of funny, but not funny in a way, is the margarine that's still on the trays. And now with the FDA bans on trans fat, that's going to eventually, hopefully, disappear in the next few years as a product. But that's still in a health service, on a health service meal plan. So, and that would be for, let's say, a diet with high cholesterol or people at risk for coronary artery disease because they don't want to give them butter, but they're having margarine. So, that's the movement of, well, you know, we're going with the science behind, we know that sugar is bad for diabetics per se, so let's just give them artificial sweeteners and let's not take into context the whole, like you said, the glycemic load and index of the foods and the meal itself. And, you know, there's so much more to it than simply saying black and white. And I think that the education maybe stems you more towards that black and white aspect of food when there's so many more variables and components, whether it's with the food itself, the person him or herself, the condition they're going through. There's so many other variables to take into account when it's coming into what actually a person should be eating. And I think that that's how it differs from where I've gone to in terms of promoting that whole real food approach. And taking that basic scientific education and learning what sugar and learning what food, what the chemistry of food is, and then saying, okay, but how does that relate to the person themselves? And I think that that's where that line gets blurred.
That's excellent because that's, I think, a real difference between conventional medicine in general, as well as nutrition, and what we would call holistic, because what you're doing is looking at the person, not just the condition.
Right. So typically when someone comes, even taking me for example, you know, someone comes into my office and says, I just want to lose weight. You know, what are you here for? I want to lose weight. And as we're going through symptoms, they're also experiencing constipation. They're also experiencing, they're not sleeping well. They're having anxiety. And there's all these other issues and symptoms that to them think was unrelated. And to me, I feel like, well, if we're going to, quote, unquote, fix your weight issue, let's fix everything at the same time because everything is connected to each other. And there should be, and there is, basically one approach to solve or improve on most symptoms people are experiencing, especially when it comes to those types of, you know, constipation issues or reflux or things like that, and they could all be helped. It's just that people don't know that they're related. People don't know that they could be helped. People just think, because they're told a lot of times from doctors that it's just, if we give you a medicine for it, then we consider that solved. And they don't realize that if I want to lose weight, if I just change my overall lifestyle to, again, like that living a real life with real food approach, then I'll help not only my weight, but all these other symptoms. So it's never about one aspect or one symptom. It's about, like you said, the holistic person as a whole, and everything is interconnected. And it's never these big, huge, huge changes. It's really just, you know, again, the basis of that real food approach.
So that's excellent. I'm looking at your book, just a really interesting book, and other people can join in on this discussion if they don't have a copy of the book, which I highly recommend, Living a Real Food Life with Real Food, Living a Real Life with Real Food, How to Get Healthy, Lose Weight, and Stay Energized, The Kosher Way. Now, certainly there are a lot of books about getting healthy and losing weight, but there's not a lot of books of doing it with kosher food, because I have to share, I myself am Jewish, and I'm very familiar with the kosher lifestyle, although I would say I don't necessarily maintain that personally, but my brother was, you know, Shomer Shabbos, and very strict, so I'm very well familiar with it. But I would say, from my experience, and tell me if I'm wrong, there's a big gap between something that's kosher being necessarily healthy, because it seems like most of the even glatt kosher, and for those of you who don't know what that means, Beth can tell us, but even if they're certified kosher or glatt kosher, they're sometimes loaded with toxic chemicals, dyes, preservatives, and things that certainly do not support health, even though they are kosher.
Yeah, sometimes it's even more so, because like most diets in the world, you know, they've come to mimic, you know, a westernized diet. So as the food products want to, even though ingredients aren't inherently unkosher, let's say, the kosher product would want to try to come up with a product similar to one that's not kosher and then substitute chemicals for it. So sometimes it's even more so these days. And it, my whole premise of my book was that we needed to take it back to our biblical roots of days traveling in the desert and being provided manna from God, and that we couldn't leave it over till the next day and it could take on the taste of whatever we create in our own kitchens. And that's how it used to be. And like most diets, it evolved into being heavily processed and usually with ingredients that are, you know, MSG, monosodium glutamate, trans fat. We're going to be really hit hard with that ban, but in hopefully a good way, on those food products, because we can't have, for example, dairy and meat eaten at the same time. We can't eat dairy after meat within a certain amount of hours.
So what you said, well, let's just backtrack a little bit so we explain this clearly to our listeners, because some of them really may not know what you're talking about. I know it's just every day with you, but in your book, you have really, really whole, wonderful chapters about, you know, what the concepts are within kosher. And I really like, you know, your even beginning of the chapter, you talk about your kosher song. But here you're talking about chapter 5, which you go into meat and milk, a predestined match or an unfaithful union. So for those people who are regularly eating things, let's say like cheeseburgers, that's a common food, you know, and let's say they're making a healthy cheeseburger, if such a thing exists, with free-range beef and organic cheese, let's say. Still, within kashrut, or the laws of Judaism in terms of food laws, they would say that cannot be eaten together. So what is your chapter, Meat and Milk, a Predestined Match or an Unfaithful Union? What do you share there?
So what I did was throughout the book and in that chapter was I took the premise of where things stem from a kosher perspective, and then I branched it out from there to say, and this is what these food groups are becoming in the modern world, our current world, in terms of controversy. So there are there's that whole paleo movement who loves their red meat. And then dairy has always been, for a long time, increasingly a controversy, cow's milk. So I initially started that chapter bringing the awareness of the fact that, isn't it interesting that a kosher diet has a law that we can't eat dairy and meat together? And I just kind of stopped it there, because the thing is with kosher, that what's a lot very difficult for a lot of people to grasp is that it's not all explained. Meaning, like you said in the beginning, a kosher diet doesn't necessarily mean a healthy diet. It doesn't necessarily mean much of anything, because the real reason why in Judaism they have to follow a kosher diet is because God said so. And a lot of things aren't explained.
Well, I just say this. We're going to continue your explanation, and you're totally right on. And, of course, your focus is on a Jewish diet. But many different groups and religious affiliations have dietary restrictions, such
right.
as the Seventh-day Adventists who are Christian, the Muslims, because the halal laws are actually surprisingly similar to the kashrut laws. And so you're not the only, it's not the only group that has these
right.
kind of restrictions.
So that's exactly kind of my point, where it's meat and dairy come up a lot throughout history of having something about them that makes these sets of rules or parameters around them. And now modern-day age, we're having the issue of, well, paleos love it, you know, vegans hate it, and dairy is a controversy that's linked with behavior issues and all these other symptoms. So there's always been something about them. So bringing that controversy and awareness out in my book, then I go through, let's focus on the quality here and find the current research that what we could take from the research and from all the sides about how we could implement this into our life. So with the focus of my whole book and what real food really means is quality foods. So if you don't want to be extreme and say, and which I believe in extremism anyways, I don't want to write off any one food group and just say I don't do that. I want to find the right way to do it. I want to find the quality of it. So if you're going to go for the red meat, I bring quotes through Maimonides, who was a huge doctor throughout history, aside from a biblical Talmudic scholar. And he has a lot of books on medical and biblical things. And he just explains to eat it once a week. We have the Sabbath once a week. And he says you should have a high-fat meat to help celebrate that day. But it doesn't reference eating it every day. And then there's the quality aspect of the meat and the way that the cows are live in America, and the feedlots and the antibiotics and the sicknesses and the fact that they don't have any sun. And ideally we should be eating grass-fed beef because of the content. Now, in kosher world, it's a little difficult to get that. Like you mentioned, glatt kosher is a certain way that they slaughter the meat and clean the meat. They take out certain parts of the meat. There's a rabbinical supervision involved. There's a special slaughterer who performs these tasks. And it, because of all those parameters around it, it's difficult to find that quality beef. So I was explaining in my book that the way to kind of have the red meat then is to try to find this quality grass-fed meat, have it, you know, less often than you would be having, let's say, a plant-based diet, and you know, enjoy it for what it is in moderation. The problem is that serving sizes of meat is pretty small per serving, and we're all overeating it. And we're overeating it when it's coming from sources that are, like I said, you know, have bacteria, antibiotics, growth hormones, all these issues, and we're eating that and promoting our bodies for this inflammation, which to me is basically the biggest problem in terms of chronic diseases and a lot of medical issues that people are going through, and it really could be helped through their diet. And the same thing with dairy. I do believe a lot of people don't tolerate dairy for one reason or the other. And in my book, I just showed so many substitutions for that.
Well, that's great information. We're going to just take a little break right here, Beth, and then we're going to continue our discussion. And listeners, you are listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And I'm your host, Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. You can always find us and comment at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Our guest today is Beth Warren, a registered dietitian, and lots of other degrees that she has. And she's the author of a lovely book, Living a Real Life with Real Food, How to Get Healthy, Lose Weight, and Stay Energized the Kosher Way. And we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this- this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the essential oil taken from the Australian tea tree.
The tea tree, known as Melaleuca alternifolia, grows in only one region of the world, the northeast corner of Australia. It is a full-sized tree of the myrtle family, whose oil has powerful abilities to clean and help heal wounds and skin ailments such as cuts, burns, and rashes. In 1770, the infamous Captain Cook was a lieutenant in the British Royal Navy when his ship landed in Australia. The botanist on board, Sir Joseph Banks, collected samples of a sticky aromatic leaf and brought them back to England for further investigation.
In 1923, an Australian curator and chemist, Dr. Penfold, conducted a study on tea tree leaves and discovered that their essential oils are 13 times stronger as an antiseptic bactericide than carbolic acid, considered the standard in the early 1900s. The oil contains 50 to 60% terpenes, 6 to 8% cineol, which causes its camphor-like odor, and several kinds of alcohols. In 1933, the Australian Journal of Pharmacy, the American Journal of the National Medical Association, and the British Medical Journal reported that tea tree oil is a powerful disinfectant, non-poisonous, non-irritating, and has been used successfully in a very wide range of septic conditions. Australian tea tree oil is mentioned in the British Pharmaceutical Codex of 1949, the UK Medicine List, and the Dispensary of the United States.
During World War II, tea tree oil was considered a standard issue item for all first aid kits for Army and Navy units in tropical regions. The demand for tea tree oil exceeded the supply. However, after World War II, synthetic drugs gained in popularity and the use of tea tree oil in medicine waned. In more recent times, a renewed interest in natural, non-toxic alternatives has triggered a resurgence in tea tree oil research. In 1985, Dr. Paul Belacher, chief of the phytotherapy department at the Faculty of Medicine, University of Paris, worked on several double-blind studies involving tea tree oil and its application as a remedy for candidiasis, chronic cystitis, staph and strep infections, and nail bed fungus. He stated, and we quote, "The essential oil of Melaleuca has entered the team of major essential oils and emerges as an antiseptic and antifungal weapon of the first order in phytoaromatherapy."
Try a few drops of tea tree oil in a steam vaporizer and inhale for blocked sinuses, or rub the oil on chest and back for a cough. The Australian Journal of Dentistry reported that using tea tree oil in dental hygiene and in surgery showed it to be an extremely effective antiseptic. Add a drop on your toothbrush or include it as a gargle and mouthwash. Tea tree oil can be applied directly to the skin. Although it's possible that some people may experience a mild allergic reaction, in-depth research has shown tea tree oil to be non-irritating and safe.
So, listeners, think about including tea tree oil, the first aid kit in a bottle, in your natural medicine chest.
Okay, I guess we're back. So we'll reintroduce our guest today. We are here today with Beth Warren. We're going to be talking to her further about her book, Living a Real Life with Real Food, How to Get Healthy, Lose Weight, and Stay Energized. And I would like all our listeners to know that you can get in touch with us anytime by going to naturalnurse.com. One of the things we do is offer herbal certification courses, both for professionals and, in fact, professionals such as Beth, dietitians, clinical nutritionists, acupuncturists, massage therapists can all get CE credits for taking our herbal certification course, and they are available online. And of course, people can take it just for their own verification, and they do get a certificate from Florida School of Natural Living. saying that they did finish the course, whether or not you need the CEUs for professional development. And we also do consultations for individuals who would like to use natural remedies such as herbs, homeopathics, natural foods, spiritual techniques, radionics. We teach you how to do radionics for yourself and your family. If you don't know what that is, you may want to get in touch and find out. We have classes in that going on pretty much every day. So you can always get in touch by going to naturalnurse.com or by going to Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And thank you so much for joining us today. And Beth is with us discussing a very, very interesting topic of her book, Living a Real Life with Real Food, How to Get Healthy, Lose Weight, and Stay Energized. So thank you so much for joining us today, Beth.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Now, we just left off on your description about eating meat was really excellent, saying that probably what many biblical scholars really had in mind was having a natural food plant-based diet because that's what there was at the time. And then if meat was included, there had to be a lot of special parameters in terms of choosing the right meat and the right animal and actually slaughtering them with consciousness. And so it wasn't the same thing as, you know, commercial farming is today. So that was really, really interesting. Thank you for sharing that with us. And how would you say that some of the other, you know, what is having a kosher seal mean in terms of when people check that out about food? Because you talked about free range and grass fed. That does not necessarily mean kosher.
Right, exactly. So that's what I was alluding to before, how the way the food system has evolved and the food products, it's started to become necessary for organizations to come in and kind of come up with this way of letting kosher consumers know that a product is actually kosher. Because aside from the ingredients themselves, you know, we all kind of know already that food labels don't always, at least we know enough to know that they don't always have to say every single ingredient in a product if there isn't enough of it to list.
So you talk a lot in your book about, you know, sort of the fads that are out there and their use of words that might, you know, sort of suck people into thinking that they're healthy. I really love your list about that. Like, for instance, the words fat-free, sugar-free, and fiber-rich. How
right.
do those play on fad diets?
That basically plays on all of them. I mean, the funny thing is that over time, they're just adding more names, more taglines like that, fat-free, because that was the first phase that really came out where we all took fat out of products when we were linking it, all fats with heart disease, you know, in the early 90s. And then it became a sugar issue, and now we're all vilifying sugar, so now it also says sugar-free. Now the newer ones are kind of getting on to what I was recommending before this happened, set to have high-fiber foods, only now they're putting in heavily processed forms of fiber into products that aren't natural.
You know what? What about, that's such a good point.
Yeah.
What about, you know, I see things that are called gluten-free, which may or may not be kosher.
Right.
But let's say they're kosher and gluten-free.
Uh-huh.
And you read the list of ingredients, and it's a horrible food with all kinds of flour, potato flour,
yeah.
even
and
though
it's, really
it's gluten-free.
It's unfortunate because you kind of get excited. You know, that's also... You know, currently now we're talking about trans fat free. You know, I'm excited about that in the sense where obviously we've known for years and years how detrimental trans fats are to our health. But now I'm worried because what are they going to put instead? So you're right in saying that gluten free could have been used. And I've worked with people who want to try gluten free for a wide range of reasons. Like, I know that a lot of people just say gluten-free is only for people with the celiac disease. It's not necessarily true if they're going through certain symptoms. It doesn't hurt to try if you're under the care of a qualified nutritionist or dietitian to perform it, because what you don't want to happen is that you go gluten-free and then instead substitute a lot of these common products on the market that have a lot of corn in it and potato starch and all this other stuff, very high in high glycemic carbohydrates, have issues in and of themselves, and latch onto that instead of taking the opportunity to say, going gluten-free for means alternating all my whole grain options, wild rice, quinoa, all these sorts of grains, and still balancing them and putting them in context of an overall heavily, you know, produce vegetable diet, not just not solving that problem. So it was kind of like what we were saying earlier in the conversation, where you can't just kind of just target one thing and not change your whole lifestyle as a whole and change your diet as a whole. So you have to be very careful with the products on the market that come out. When something becomes free, you have to look at what comes instead. And
yeah, that's so true, because fat-free usually means it's loaded up with sweeteners.
Yes, and chemicals. And then sugar.
And chemicals. And another term to watch out for, I think, is light.
Light, natural. I mean, I don't even know what natural means, but natural.
Oh, good. Tell us what you think natural means on a food label, or what people should take that to mean, because certainly they'll go, oh, it's natural, it must be good. Beth said to eat natural.
Natural, I think, was one of the first ones out there, because I feel like I've seen that for the longest on products. It means nothing. It really doesn't mean anything. There's a lot of things that are natural that we don't eat. You know, really has no say. The funniest to me, and I reference it in my book, would be, let's say, a Twizzlers, that they boast in, like, a highlighted spot, fat-free food. And I always laugh when I see that. And I laugh, but really it's not funny, because I know better, but a lot of people don't. And it's really taking advantage of people who, and that's where my whole book is really revolved more around education and trying to educate people that we have to be aware that these companies are not out there necessarily for our benefits. They're out there to sell products, and you have to really understand what each word means. That's your responsibility. It's not, you don't have to go to school for years and years to understand that when a food says fat-free, we have to look to see what's substituted instead. That's all. And
okay, well, since we're talking about fats, let's go into that. I mean, is eating fat going to make you fat, and is it really bad to eat fat?
Right. So if you notice in my book, that's one of the first chapters of food groups I go through, because that's such a pet peeve of mine when people say that. I mean, there's people that I follow, you know, who friend me on Facebook. You know, I'm on Facebook, and I watch what people post. You know, they're friending me. So they'll post, like, their diet or what they ate for the day, and they're not asking me to comment or anything. They're just posting it, you know, to the public forum, and they would have, you know, like, sugar-free Jell-O on there and, you know, all these foods, highly processed. And then the funny thing is that the next day I would see how the person saying, I'm so starving, I have no more snacks left in my day, I already am at my calories, I'm so hungry, and basically sounds miserable. Fats in food, healthy fats, help promote weight loss. And it's not the other way around. Of course you think of things in context of your caloric needs for the day, but even that equation is not so simple to formulate based on how many calories you burn. We use something in my practice called a BIA machine, bioelectrical impedance.
What is that?
BIA machine.
Say what that machine is again. I didn't hear you.
Yeah, it's called the bioelectrical impedance analysis, BIA is the abbreviation. And it basically works a little bit like when you get an EKG, where you put these little electrodes on you. And it measures your basal metabolic rate, you know, for you, meaning it'll be able to tell us how many calories you are burning for your body a day. And that's a much more accurate assessment to go off of if you are planning a food plan where you're taking calories that much into context. But to just do an equation and just say, I'm going to only eat, you know, 1,000 calories a day, it doesn't really mean much. You want to still focus on the quality of foods that you're eating, because otherwise, like this person, they're hungry all day, they're miserable, they're eating very processed foods. It's not helping them in the long run at all. It's not making them lose weight any faster. Healthy fats boost your metabolism by 10%. Nuts and foods like that have a lot of research behind it. They also have a satisfaction factor to it because of the fat in food. I mean, if you want to be honest, when you have fat-free ice creams, for example, you could eat 4 bars easily, because there's nothing in it satisfying you. And it's because of the sugar content and that load, it's causing you to crave more. So you have to do things and eat things and eat foods that are helping you, that are helping you with your goals, not making them more difficult. And that's why diets and the word diet became so depressing, is because it's really so heavily, if you eat foods in a diet that are making you feel depressed, then who would ever want to try to change the way they eat? So you have to focus on the foods with fat that are healthy for you, that are known to satisfy you and make you feel happier because of that, and more encouraged to follow. In the long run, you have to think of things in the long run. In the long run, that really benefits you more and benefits your weight loss a lot more.
So what are some of the healthy fats that you would recommend?
Well, like I said, I love nuts. I have difficulty when people come to me with nut allergies because I love them so much. They would be on every single day of my life and food plans.
Why?
That I cut.
Why do you feel that nuts provide a really healthy fat?
Well, they definitely have healthy fat, but aside, like I said, of boosting your, if you go back to the beginning of the conversation, one thing I said is that if you could solve 10 problems instead of just one, like, why wouldn't you go for the 10, you know? So aside from boosting your weight loss efforts, which, you know, a lot of people come to me initially with, it also helps improve a lot of your lipid numbers. So your cholesterol, it will actually improve with healthy fat. So you could also be improving your cholesterol just by eating them. They have a lot of fiber, so it could help with digestion. And going to the bathroom becomes easier. And it helps make you feel fuller because of the fiber. It has protein in them, so protein is known to satisfy you and give you a satisfaction factor. So that, along with the fat content, makes you feel a lot more satisfied in your day. They also have tons of vitamins and minerals. And the cool part is that all the different types of nuts have different compositions of all these different vitamins and nutrients. So you're basically having a medicine cocktail just with choosing a variety of nuts, which is really fun, in my opinion. You have tons of omega-3s and walnuts, and then you have the less-calorie nuts like pistachios and almonds, and you just kind of go about your day saying, like, but what am I in the mood for more today? Am I in the mood to have a little bit more nuts? Maybe I'll go for the pistachios today because they're a little less calories, but I'll make sure to get the walnuts in later. And it becomes a whole fun experience just with the nuts themselves, because there's so much you could do with them. You could put them as toppings into salads. You could eat them on their own as a snack, and then you could have a little bit more. You could put them with breakfast in a smoothie. I make basically a cashew milk in the morning, but not even intentionally. I have coffee. I put...
how would you choose your coffee?
No, so I put a tablespoon diluted. I would use an instant coffee. I would use that with cashew milk. So I put cashews in a blender in like a Vitamix with water and a tablespoon of coffee and two dates and a splash of pure vanilla. And I have like that every morning, a quarter cup of cashews. I don't know if I said that, but it becomes a breakfast smoothie instead of just saying I'm having coffee in the morning. So it's so versatile the way you could use nuts and incorporate them into different functions of your day and of your meals and of your snacks. So I love them as a food.
Well, that's good, as long as somebody, like you say, doesn't have allergies about
allergies.
That. So we're going to go to another little
allergies,
break
so we just, we come up
for,
with
to allow the station to identify itself and tell our listeners about some of the other fantastic shows that are right here on Progressive Radio Network. And when we come back, Beth, we'll continue our discussion to the top of the hour. And you can perhaps give us, perhaps some research, because I know you have a lot of research and clinical experiences and recipes in your book that are wonderful. And so you can share those with us when we get back. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Stay tuned for more cutting-edge viewpoints on PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
The story behind the story, your story, my story. It's all in the mix on Lead Stories right here on PRN.FM. This is Utrice Lead inviting you to share your thoughts and opinions and expand your knowledge about critical issues of the day, Monday through Friday, right after Gary Null's show. Listen live to a broadcast or get Lead Stories whenever you want from PRN's archive. You can even rate the show on iTunes. Now pass the word. Tell this story to everyone you know. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Hi there, this is Harvey Wasserman. I am the host of the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show, which airs every Monday at 3 p.m. at PRN.FM. We cover the great issues of your health and wellness, of the health and wellness of the planet, of moving ahead towards a Solartopian, green-powered, holistic Earth. Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
This is PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome back once again to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we have as our guest today, nutritionist, registered dietitian, Beth Warren, author of the book, Living a Real Life with Real Food, How to Get Healthy, Lose Weight, and Stay Energized, The Kosher Way. Well, we talked a lot, Beth, already about the kosher aspect, the natural aspect. How does weight loss come into play in terms of using your program?
So the thing is that we said in the beginning kosher doesn't necessarily mean healthier. Throughout the whole book, what I'm saying is that why can't we use kosher to be healthier? There's a lot of lifestyle factors involved with keeping a kosher diet that I was explaining to readers that we should use in context of a healthy diet and a healthy way of life. For example, we're taught at a very young age, I even teach my young children, that they have to put a food back in a grocery store if it's not kosher. And there's such a sense of discipline there, and no questions asked, and we just don't eat this, that I said, we have to use that type of behavior and discipline to say, this food is not healthy for us, is not helping me with my goals of weight loss and improving whatever medical condition I'm going through. I need to put this down. I need to put this back. And why can't we use these behaviors and these mindful eating techniques to be healthful? So another thing is that we, in a kosher lifestyle, we say blessings over our food before we eat it. So in Hinduism and other mindful eating techniques and cultures like that, they also stop and meditate before they eat for a minute and say, you know, what are we doing here right now? Let's put our mind in the moment. And if we do those kinds of actions and pay attention to what we're eating, that also helps our health and weight. So using that behavior of having to say a blessing before food and saying, aside from just acknowledging and thanking God for this food at the moment, taking a minute to savor the food and using that as like a pacer and say, you know, we're eating now, let's focus, let's eat slow. All these mindfulness ideas to be used, not just because we have to do it in terms of a kosher diet and following kosher laws, but also because we want to be healthy. So,
and of course, that was a big part of it. Like you mentioned, Maimonides gave tons of information about healthy eating, which has been sort of lost as we move forward in history.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because, you know, I have siblings who learn these books really in depth. And when I was writing the book and I would go to my brother and talk to him about this, there are so many even more references in the Talmudic literature and other literature in relation to food. And it's so amazing how it's so ingrained in our lifestyle. And and we kind of lost it, or we're not really taking it into our current modern day lifestyle and saying, if they were saying this stuff, then, you know, there's something to this. We need to bring this into modern day living and not just learn it for the sake of learning, just to, you know, connect ourselves with the past and things like that, but actually implement them into modern day life, and also with the added fact of using it to be healthier.
That's a good point. Now, you work quite a bit with families and children. How do autism and ADHD figure in to your experience with healthy eating?
So that was really interesting, and a lot of that came out with internships that I've done, where I got exposed to different dietary and lifestyle factors that medical sources were using in conjunction with other therapies to help alleviate symptoms or improve them, and a wide range of symptoms. It's not only mental health and behavioral health. It was also with constipation and gastrointestinal distress they were going through, and a lot of these children can communicate, so they can't even explain when something's bothering them or hurting them. So, you know, it was very interesting to see how there's a lot of food sensitivities and allergies involved there. I'm not saying causal. I'm not saying it cures anything. I'm just saying that it helps. And you, there's so many different routes with food to go. That's what's great about diet. We have such a range of food we can work with and food groups. So, you know, if we're working to eliminate one to test the food sensitivity, we could increase another one, and we, you know, you kind of watch how things go, and it's flexible and things like that. So I really see differences in, let's say, constipation issues. I've been reported from parents that it helps them do better in other therapy areas. Maybe they'll have a better awareness. They'll be a little calmer. It's helped a lot. I also deal a lot
with that.
Well, that's
a deal. I mean, if you have a child that's ADHD and hyperactive, and you change their food, and you get, you know, a little bit more calmness, that relates to, you know, better learning capacity.
Well,
and I know there's
ADHD,
a lot of actual science to support that.
ADHD symptoms, for sure, when it comes to those food chemicals, I mean, that you see a huge change in and of itself, because those food colorings, blue number one, all those food dyes, I always tell parents if they don't want to go more extreme with special diets, because they are a commitment, even just, again, focusing on the real food, less processed foods, ingredients you could pronounce, things like that already help. They really, really help. And you know, I know it's frustrating and it's always hard, because sometimes we're dealing with this with these children as a parent. It's frustrating, and they don't want to add. They think it's adding an extra stress or an extra burden to work on their diet as well. And I always explain that there's so many substitutions these days. Not that they can never enjoy a treat. It's that there's quality treats out there now, quote unquote, you know, on occasion. And there's just an education that needs to happen of what these alternatives are. So one thing in my practice I really try to do at least once every 3 months is do a supermarket tour, and I try to work with certain groceries to open it up to the public and whoever could come. You know, usually it's free of charge, and I show them how to navigate these health food stores and how to find these foods that are alternatives for, let's say, a dairy-free diet or a gluten-free diet that are still good choices. And if they want a treat on occasion, you know, hey, or have this kind of treat, because at least you're not, you know, injecting all these poisons into them. So it's just an education. It seems overwhelming in thought, but in practicality, it's really not these days. We could find the alternative products.
I think it's just a mindset, you know, thinking about if you look in your refrigerator and everything in there is bad and everything in there is going to increase, as you said, inflammation, then it's a daunting concept to a person to think about really, you know, sort of getting rid of everything in their house and reshopping, because you can't do it just for a child.
Right.
You have to actually make a commitment and change
in
the
home.
Yeah,
and that's a huge point. That's a huge point. And I see children for reasons outside of this, for over obesity or, you know, other issues. And it's so difficult if you're just trying to change this one child and not the family as a whole. Everybody really needs to change. They're children. The concept is lost if everyone doesn't take this on. And everyone's better for it. It's not like something that you take on for no reason. It's my job and my goal in the book, in my practice, in my life, is to teach people and show people that this is not overwhelming. It's really not overwhelming. You start with one thing at a time. I usually recommend grains, at least focus on whole grains. That's a big change for people. And it has such an impact on your health. And it's already like a huge transformation for them as a family, because they'll be eating white pastas, you know, most nights of the week. So, you know, first focus on whole grains. Then you got to start shopping a little bit more for fruits and vegetables, having them in the house. You have to first, like you said, hit the nail on the head with you have to have these foods in the house. The foods you have in the house aren't good. You're not going to be eating well. The foods in your house are good. Everyone's going to be eating well. Children get hungry. They're going to want to eat what you have. So I would never worry that a child won't eventually eat what you buy, unless there's certain situations going on. But that's certain medical conditions. But for the most part, you know, if you have control over your home, and that should be the place, the foundation that of healthy living, and what they get on the outside, you'll get to that, but your home is your first step.
That's so true. You really have to take a first step. It's, you know, baby steps before you actually can move full steam ahead. But how worth it is it? Because when we talk about side effects, if you were to make these changes for your child being the impetus, and then you change the diet and what's available in the house for the whole family to fresher food, whole food, get rid of those packaged kosher foods, especially in the case of your clients, by learning to read your labels and when it has a paragraph on it. You know, donate it to a homeless shelter. Do something,
right.
But don't eat it. Even not to say homeless people don't deserve healthy food also, but if you feel very bad about just throwing it out, which is really what should be done with it, shouldn't even be allowed to be on the market in the first place, in my mind. Should be illegal.
Right.
It's not really food. But anyway, I'm just sharing my point of view with it. And then replacing it with whole food in the house. Once that's done, it makes it easier, because when someone opens the refrigerator, there's an apple there instead of a packaged, kosher, really unhealthy cake. So,
exactly.
You know, it's really wonderful if people can visit you and learn how to make that change for themselves and their family. Beth, we're coming to the end of our time together, so if you'd like to again tell us a little bit about where people can find you, and we're very happy to have you on today as our guest.
Thank you. Well, my website, like you said, is BethWarrenNutrition.com. On there, you could see all my social media handles on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. And please feel free to message me. There's an email contact form there as well with any questions. I always love to hear from everyone. And you could tag me on any questions on social media. And my book is called Living a Real Life with Real Food, which also could be available on my website. Or Amazon or Barnes & Noble's or any of those book retailers.
Okay, well, thank you so much, and thank you for your great work bringing together some concepts that have not really been addressed before. It's really the best discussion that I have seen about real foods, especially with a focus on kosher. So thank you so much for bringing that to our audience.
Thank you.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us once again right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Dr. Z and I both wish you the best and hope that you stay healthy.